Offer valid on standard browsers, U.S. only.
When I heard about Date My Age, I thought, really? But there I was in my empty, quiet house, my laptop on the kitchen counter, and I typed in my name. Looking for a man between the ages of, 40 to 60? Sure, why not?
Date My Age is different. With verified profiles, you can feel safe and secure to explore meaningful connections with interesting and mature singles.
Date My Age made it really easy. I could join and view online profiles for free. All of a sudden, my empty house wasn't so quiet anymore. I got so much attention, it just made me feel seen and alive. Date My Age helped me start a totally new chapter in my life.
Find a friend, a lover, a partner at Date My Age. Get 60% off when you join at datemyage.com today. That's datemyage.com to connect with thousands of singles worldwide. datemyage.com.
Making a cure would have killed you.
Then I was supposed to die. That was my purpose. My life would have fucking mattered, but you took that from me. You took it from everyone.
Yes. And I'll pay the price. Because you're gonna turn away from me. But if somehow I had a second chance at that moment, I would do it all over again.
Because you're selfish.
Because I love you. In a way you can't understand.
Hey, Zed Heads, welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Lucy.
And I'm Eric.
And I'm Ben.
And this is The Cast of Us, episode 646.
And this episode, we're covering The Last of Us, season 2, episode 6, The Price.
The Price, and it's all four of us, and yay, that's
gang's
fun.
Gang's all here.
What? Welcome back, Lucy. What did you think of last week's, Lucy?
What was last
week? The park with the... Got Sarah you. Fights.
Yeah. It was dark. Poor Gabrielle Tati
spores.
Meeting a pretty horrible death down in the basement. Yeah, Ellie went full.
She lives, actually. I shouldn't probably say that, but no. I'm just kidding. She's
I'm like, how?
She just has a very bad limp throughout the rest of the show.
It's the biggest twist. You find out she's actually immune to.
Oh my god, no way. It was dark but enjoyable. I was late watching. We had visitors last weekend, so I was late. So I've actually watched these two quite close together. Mm. So it was quite nice to have the very dark into something much warmer.
I love that. Yeah. And it works the same way in the game too, where it's so intense and then you get a little palate cleanser here with some nicer, better times. Well, why don't we go right into the plot summary, Lucy? Would you like to read it?
Yes. Where is this one from? Is this a Wikipedia one?
It's a combination Wikipedia ChatGPT with a little added Jason in there.
I was going to say, I think motherfucking dinosaur needs a citation. Actually, you could cite that because she does say it.
Certainly does, yes.
Plot summary. Through a series of flashbacks, we witness key moments between Joel and Ellie on her birthdays. At 15, he surprises her with a hand-restored guitar. At 16, he takes her to a dilapidated museum where she's moved by its space exhibits. And also, she climbs up on top of a motherfucking dinosaur. At 17, their bond fractures when Joel angrily interrupts a moment of intimacy between Ellie and another girl. On her 19th birthday, during her first patrol, they find Eugene, Gail's husband, bitten. Joel promises Ellie they'll escort him back to say goodbye, but instead leads Eugene away and executes him, later lying to Gail that Eugene chose suicide to protect her. Ellie, now aware Joel also lied about the fireflies, tells Gail the truth. 9 months later, after the New Year's Eve dance, Ellie finally confronts Joel about what happened at the hospital. He confesses everything and says he'd do it all again. Ellie, heartbroken, tells him she's not sure she can forgive him, but wants to try. In the present day, Ellie returns to the theater.
I just realized something. No, I guess the timing doesn't quite add up, but at one point Ellie had said, just kind of jokingly, if you let me go out on patrol with you, I promise I won't get pregnant. And then there was a 9 months later at one point. Oh. See, you should have taken me out on patrol.
Amazing.
But anyway, what did you guys think? Ben, what did you think?
I want to say I'm actually really glad, because I originally was not supposed to be on this episode, but I knew I was really looking forward to this episode because of what the flashbacks entailed, mm-hmm. and I was glad you actually asked me to come on and be a part of this one. It's similar to season one. The Bill and Frank episode was probably my favorite episode of the entire season. I think this might be my favorite episode of this second season, just because it is full of emotion and it's so well done story-wise, and the acting from everybody through this, from Pedro to Bella to Joey Pants, mm-hmm. is phenomenal.
And who plays Gail? I always forget her name.
Catherine O'Hara.
Very yeah. good, too.
Yeah, this might be my favorite episode of this season.
That's really cool. Eric?
I may have to agree with that this is probably also my favorite season so far. I mean, episode two would be a real close second, but I liked the levity. I liked using the birthdays as a, you know, bit of a milestone to kind of keep going back to give us these nice little kind of time stamps along the way. I thought it was really well done. I absolutely enjoyed it. We got to see a full range from joyful little moments to angry moments to heartfelt. It had a lot to it, and I thoroughly appreciated it and enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Lucy?
Yeah, if this episode was a eulogy for Joel, which I think it kind of was, it was a very honest eulogy, and I liked that. I liked that they didn't shy away from his flaws, which I think are on full display in a lot of this episode. So yeah, I think it was a really interesting character study, and lovely that they got Neil Druckmann to direct it. It feels very much coming straight from the person whose vision this was, which mm-hmm. I think is very fitting.
Him and Hallie Gross,
yeah,
who was not involved in the first game but came in to co-write the second game with Neil Druckmann. And if you hear interviews with them, it's clear that she is a huge part of why that game is the way it is. And yeah. Now she got to co-write this episode with Neil Druckmann and Craig Mazin, and you can really feel her stamp on it. For one thing, she's funny as hell, and I mm-hmm. think this episode had a lot of funny moments, but I was really glad that they brought her into the show too.
Yeah.
I just thought, yeah, it was really, I've been finding myself using the word wonderful a lot with this show, which I don't really say, but it just feels it's such a wonderful episode, emotional in the best way. It makes other parts of the season better, you know, kind of cluing us in on why certain things happened the way that did.
Yeah.
Make more sense. And I just love the idea of taking Joel away from us and then giving us just a little bit more of him. And it kind of is like how when you lose someone and you wish you could just have one more day with them, it was like that, like, oh, I do get to have one more day with this person. Mm-hmm. And then I just think that thing that ties the episode together is I did this a lot on White Lotus. Instead of grouping my points by themes, I would just say a thematic thing up front that kind of touches through all of it.
Yeah.
And in this case, it's parenting and how to balance how much to protect your child versus how much to let go and let your kids take care of themselves the way they want to. And it's like not easy. Like, it's absolutely a parent's job to be protective. I am constantly, since Bodhi learned to walk, having to yell at him not to run up to the street corner, or I have to grab his hand and hold it, you know. And now that he's eight, it's finally getting to the point where I can trust him not to just run out into the damn street. But how to balance being protective and also preparing a kid to be their own person. And that can be a really tough transition, finding that line and when to step in and when to let go, and doing it gracefully. And somewhere in there, as a parent, you almost always have to be more protective than your kid wants, for sure. And also somewhere in there, you have to be less protective than you're comfortable with. And finding that line is tough, you know. Nobody ever does it perfectly, I don't think.
I loved how at 17, Joel says, are you trying to get all the teenage things all done at once?
Yeah. You know? The drugs, the sex, the tattoo. That was good.
Yeah.
I think there was like a line that sort of summed it up for me, like all the debates we have about Joel and Ellie and that relationship and Joel's decision. At the end, when they're on the porch and they're arguing, and Ellie says, you did that because you're selfish.
Yeah.
And he said, I did it because I love you. And I'm like, you know what I'm going to say? Both can be true. Both absolutely. Can be true.
And I don't think they took anything away from that. I think they absolutely let that sit. And
exactly.
That is absolutely true. Yes, he is selfish and he would do it again.
Yeah. Exactly. And what I loved about it is Ellie receives it that way, both being true, because she's like, I don't know if I can ever forgive you for that, almost immediately after that. But then she says, but I really want to try, or, you know, I'd like to try. And I think that to me, that means on some level, she is okay with what he did, you know?
Well, she's known in her gut for a long time.
But my question is more not so much about whether she knew, but whether she's okay with it. And I think it's not black and white with her.
Yeah. And I think what I'm getting at is because she's lived with it for a long time, now that she's got the confirmation, it's easier to say, I can start trying to forgive you for this. I think if it had come out as a complete surprise, that conversation would have gone quite differently. But in that moment, he met her where she was, treated her like an adult, told her the truth, which she'd known in her heart.
He was finally honest with her.
Yeah.
And for the first time.
And I think that's exactly it. I think it's not so much the actions of what he did. It was the fact that he lied to her about it.
Yeah.
It was the mistrust that hurt more than what he actually did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, almost since throughout almost all of their time together, there's been this barrier between them that the air was not clear, and that infected, no pun intended, their relationship. And even, you know, when they're having the best of times during her 16th birthday, and then, or whichever birthday that was, and then she sees the fireflies, it reminds her, oh yeah, there's still this thing that I'm not sure about with him, and that means we can't be completely okay with each other until this is cleared up, until my doubts are cleared up. And so this is the night that her doubts are finally cleared up. And that's one thing. But the other thing that I'm really pointing out is the fact that she says, I want to try to forgive you for this, to me means not only is she able to do that because they are finally honest with each other, but also I think there's a part of her that is happy he did it, that he did it because he loves her. And, you know, I think it's not black and white with her. Maybe I'm wrong about that. It's not. She doesn't explicitly say that. I'm just reading into it, you know? And I think some people would argue, no, it doesn't mean she's okay with it. Because I also think, based on what she said, you know, I that was my purpose and you took it away from me. I'm paraphrasing, but something like that. And
I think that's the exact line. I think you got it right.
Yeah. But I think that means that probably if back at the hospital they had asked her, can you please do this for us? You could save all of humanity. You will not survive. I'm pretty sure she would have said yes.
It was interesting, wasn't it, that Joel was like, yeah, they would have found a cure. I'm like, really? I thought the hospital looked kind of janky. I'm like, I'm not going to
about
that. Okay, I mean, I'm not sure of that either.
Honestly, no one knows, right? No matter how good they are. And Jenny sitting next to me is like, because when she kept asking him questions, so did you kill all the fireflies? He's nodding, you know, did you, you know.
I like that he could not even bring himself to say yes or no.
But at least he's nodding. And then when she said, so could they have cured me? And before he nodded, Jenny was like, oh, you know what? I'm not so sure about that part, but he did not.
I was the same exact way. I was like, when she asked him that, I was like, I don't know if that's necessary. Yeah. Did they know for sure it would have been?
Wait.
I love the idea that if we'd all written the scene. Yeah.
A veterinarian in apocalypse is going to be able to come up with a cure for a fungus of which there are no cures or vaccines anywhere in the world.
Yeah. And so Jenny's saying, I'm in the medical field and I don't even know that. And I think that's for sure. That would absolutely be the case in the real world. But I do think for the purposes of this story, we're supposed to assume that probably there would have been a cure. That's what makes it more, you know, fraught.
And I think Joel is believing the worst version of himself in that moment, isn't he? He's like, yeah, he's not going to be like, actually, it wasn't that bad. He's like, no, I'm a dog. This is bad. This is like the worst thing I did, and I've cost everyone this.
He's not gonna get defensive. He knows he just has to sit here and just take it.
But everyone watching probably had the same reaction that we're having.
Yeah, like, we're like, wow.
I don't think you could know that. And if he was really just telling the truth, he would be like, I'm not sure. You know, I think that would have actually been the better line, honestly. But it's said in a way that's not defensive.
I was going to ask you all a question about Tommy. So Tommy knows Ellie's immune. Does he know what Joel did?
I think he knows. One thing that makes me think he knows is when Ellie came in and had burned her arm, it seemed like, you know,
he definitely knows she's immune because she goes, I'm immune.
In the first episode. What Joel did.
The reason I ask is because I think it was Joanna Robinson over on House of Horror was talking about this. The choice to have Tommy have a kid was interesting because it adds stakes to Joel's decision for Tommy that maybe aren't there if he doesn't have a kid. Like, if there could have been a cure, he's now brought a kid into this world where there is no cure because of Uncle Grumpy kind of thing. So my reading is that Tommy knows Ellie's immune but doesn't know exactly what happened at Salt Lake City. It doesn't super inform any of the points I have to make about today, but I just realized that, like, that's an assumption on my part. Maybe Tommy does know and is cool with it or doesn't believe they would have found a cure. But it was something that I didn't think the text of the show has made super clear one way or the other about who exactly knows what went down in Salt Lake City. I'm assuming Tommy doesn't, but
I would just say, given what Tommy and Joel have been through together, and we know they've done bad things together, and that if Joel told anyone, it was probably Tommy, but I guess we don't know.
Yeah, it's just interesting that layer of him having more stake in the future almost because he's got a wife and kid now, and I don't know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I wanted to check before it came up in the pod because I was like, I should check, those guys will know.
Is it this season that opens with a conversation between Joel and Tommy?
Yes, that's okay.
Because I couldn't remember what takes place during that conversation.
The game starts.
Yeah, that's in the game. But we shouldn't be.
That's the game. Okay. All right. That's why I didn't want to go into detail about it because as somebody who's watching and playing at the same time, I can't remember which is which.
Yeah.
It's hard to keep it clear. Okay. Yeah. Let's get into our points. Who did I ask first? Ben, what do you got?
I'm going to actually start with the Eugene of everything because this is something that I was really waiting to see how it was going to play out. As I know, everybody was waiting to see how it was going to play out. And I kind of touched on this a little bit earlier, but for a short of a role as this was for Joey Pantoliano to play, man, he killed this role. There was so much emotion to come out of him just pleading to be able to see Gail before he left. And it wasn't the nice little added a bonus to that too was the fact that it wasn't for him. He was doing this for Gail. He wanted Gail because it's never really been established what kind of relationship that Gail and Eugene have. Like, we know obviously she's very upset and we see that when they bring Eugene's body back. But like, they could have had a very contentious marriage for all we knew. And this kind of clears that up a little bit. I feel like I'm rambling now.
You just got started, Dan.
I know, and it's I'm ramping up, and I feel like the tires are just spinning in the mud, and I'm not going anywhere.
It was sweet, right? It was sweet. Like, Gene's like, I just want to see her one more time before I go. And I mean, I guess we still don't know for sure. Maybe he would have said, "I cheated on you, baby."
But no, but it wasn't what he had to say to her. It was what she had to say to him.
He needed her.
And I feel like it was maybe just her just saying, you know, "I forgive you," or "I love you," or "It's okay." I mean, it could be just something simple as "It's okay."
I thought he was saying not that, like Joel is saying, "Do you have any last words for her?" And he said, "No, I want it," or what she has to say to me or whatever. But I just thought it meant, "I just want to see her one more time, you know, for myself, not to give her something."
And I took it as in, this was him, you know, we talk about the whole, you know, Lucy, you kind of brought it up about the whole, you can be in love with someone and selfish at the same time.
Yeah.
Like I kind of summed it up to that as well, in that when he says to Joel, this isn't for me to say my final words to her. This is for her to say her final words to me.
Yeah.
That kind of is him being selfish because he needs that comfort before he goes.
Yeah.
He needs to hear what she has to say to him before he goes. So that is like the selfish moment. But on the other side of it, there's also a very loving moment in that he still wants to see her face before he leaves. So I feel like that was as brief as it was just another example of that both sides of the shade of gray, that there can be selfishness and there can be love at the same time.
Oh God. Yeah. I was mad at Joel. I was really mad at him. I found that really difficult. I was like, this little guy just wants to see his life. I don't know.
He seemed like he was being unnecessarily a hard ass.
Yeah, I will say one critique. I thought the CGI at the lake was quite bad. I was like, I don't think they're really at the lake. I think the lighting's wrong. I think they maybe only had this actor for one day and had to do it by gray screen. That's all I'm saying. It was fine. It was a good scene otherwise.
Okay, so I want to know, why did everybody forget that they have walkie-talkies?
Yeah, put Gail on.
I mean, put Gail on so he can talk to
him. I didn't even think about that.
I mean, they don't have to FaceTime, but I'm just saying, you know, at least get to say goodbye or something.
Yeah. Well, he did make a clear point that he needed to see her face. And then that was when Joel said, well, if you love someone, you can see them without actually
seeing. You know why they wrote it for him to say, I need to see her face? Because they knew someone on a podcast would mention the walkie-talkies.
Perhaps. Yeah, maybe.
Eugene looked straight at camera. I need to see her, her physically. Face.
Walkie-talkies won't be good enough.
They've been listening to the discourse. I'm like, yeah. I just thought I was with Ellie in that scene. I've written in my notes, this example shows that Joel does have choices. He just decides and then doesn't own his decisions. And I was like, yeah, I'm kind of with
it. In the middle. I thought, okay, they probably have some really hard and fast rules about this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That's what he said. We have rules. And if you break a rule like this and someone gets hurt, no matter who it is, then you're fucking, you might as well just go find somewhere else to live. You know, you fucked up. Mm-hmm. And so I don't blame him for sticking to the rules, but lying to her about it, that's what got him in trouble in the first place. And even that, I'm sort of like, probably not the best thing to do.
I'm actually going to take the other side of this because while I do think it was wrong of Joel to lie to Gail the way he did, I do see and understand why he did it. And
I meant lying to Ellie.
Oh, well, lying to Ellie, you're absolutely right. But I'm actually in that scene where Ellie, you know, calls out Joel for lying to Gail. I'm actually against Ellie in that moment. Like, I understand why she did it, because she wanted to punish Joel, but she was punishing other people that didn't deserve to be punished in that moment as well.
You know, Ben, I had that thought as well. Like, there was a point where I'm like, oh, okay, Ellie, you're kind of, to me, it's like, you're right, but you're not doing it for Gail, you're doing it for you, because you're angry, and that's not great.
And I'll kind of approach this, and I'll kind of help you see it as how I see it, is that I'm a retired ex-fireman. Mm. I'm not religious at all. But the number of times I had to verbally comfort someone by telling them something that I may not have actually believed, you know, it was something I had to do to help them, to help put them at ease. Mm-hmm. So for Joel to say what he did to Gail was his way of attempting to put her at ease.
Yeah.
For Ellie to call that out about how he's flat out lying, again, that was not just punishing Joel, that was punishing Gale at the same time.
I don't know, though, because what Joel said to her, like, he's like, he was bitten when we found him. That's true. Then he wanted to come back and see you, but he thought it would be, didn't want to put you in danger. That's a lie. He wasn't scared. That's a lie. He killed himself. That's a lie.
And he was brave.
And he was brave.
That's a lie.
And yeah. I think a lot of that is maybe more helpful for her to hear, but more it felt like Joel was covering his own ass. And you know, I don't know, maybe if he had said just like, he got bitten and I had to kill him because I didn't want to put anyone in danger here. That's the rule. Maybe that would have been better, you know, than all those lies. Maybe not. I don't know. I think it kind of would, but I don't know. But then once he did tell that lie and that's what Gale believed, and I was a little afraid that Gale was going to be like, that doesn't sound like him, but no, she bought into it.
Yeah.
And then she gives him a hug. And then Ellie like bursts in and burst that bubble. Then I was like, yeah, that was pretty fucked up to do. Like, I don't really agree with Joel's lie, but once he did tell that lie, then I don't agree with what Ellie did. So basically, I think everyone's kind of an asshole, except for Gale.
That's a fair way to put it, yeah.
Except Catherine O'Hara, who gives a very wonderful slap in this scene. There's a gag in Schitt's Creek about her character's famous slaps, and I was pleased to see that we got a Catherine O'Hara slap or a Moira slap.
Yeah.
A Moira slap, a Sunset Bay slap. I was like, yes, yes. I don't know. It was hard. I think the Eugene thing was always going to be a bit of a hard payoff because they kind of built it up in the first episode. Peter sort of said, I thought it was going to be more complex than this. But I was like, I don't know, it kind of is complex.
No, I thought it was great.
Yeah, I think he meant in terms of what it meant for Gale and Joel. Like, the way she built it up is like, I know you did what you did and why you had to do it, but she doesn't actually say, like, I'm pissed at you for fucking lying about it, which seems to be what she's actually annoyed about.
She said, yeah, I know you did what you had to, but the way you did it. So I think it fits perfectly.
Yeah, personally,
it fits. I don't know if it's perfect, but yeah.
But then well, she in calls the way Ellie that the liar.
You want, like, with all That's of it. These things, you have to do it in a way that's narratively satisfying, but also makes sense for the people. And sometimes, yeah, I guess it would make more sense if she had said, you lied, but then we would learn something ahead of time. It's kind of similar to how I felt when they showed the flashback of young Joel and his dad is telling the story of his own father beating him severely. And I think that writers did this on purpose. I don't know, maybe not, but it felt like that was going to be a preamble to Joel getting hit right there.
Yeah. That's what I thought. Know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, okay, that's tense and it's good narratively, but it's cruel for the father to tell the story like that, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't think that was his intention. So it's just one of those things where it makes sense narratively to do things not exactly quite like people might actually do it.
Yeah. But Eric, you made a good point, which is what I was going to say. She's quite astute to Ellie being a liar. And I'm
Like, she's letting she's kind of lets the Joel thing pass a bit, but she calls out Ellie for being a liar, even though it was Ellie who told the truth. But I think, Jason, you're 100% right. That is, or you're both right, or everybody's right, that Ellie didn't do it for the right reasons.
No.
Ellie didn't do it because it's the truth. She did it because she's angry at Joel.
She's
and it
pissed.
Finally gave her the confirmation she needed that he lied to her.
Yeah. You know,
she saw the face. Yeah,
that's right. But, and what's great about that, as far as the story goes, is when the first episode of season two dropped and Ellie was just fucking pissed at Joel the whole time. And, you know, it's 5 years later and we're like, wow, has she just been mad this whole time? Does that really make sense? And now we know that she's been holding it inside this whole time, but, you know, just kind of doubtful. But then this thing happened with Eugene, and not only did it confirm that Joel's a liar and that she knew right away because she said that's the same look you gave me before, but also it's just another just kicker, because here's yet another guy that could have been saved if the cure had been found from her body that had to die. And one more just little thing on this that I saw in the back matter that I thought was really good is when Ellie tells Gale the truth, and then she looks over at Joel and goes, "You swore." And mm-hmm. they made a point to say that was deliberate language, because Joel, when he was talking about, "I'm going to take Eugene back to Jackson,"
that was, said, "I promise.
I promise." When he said, "I swore," is back at Salt Lake when she asked him if everything he said about the Fireflies were true. So now when she's telling him, "You swore," she's saying, "You lied to me before, too."
I caught that. I did catch that for sure.
And she was testing him with the Eugene thing as well, in a way, wasn't she, when she walked away and asked for that double promise of, like, "You're going to promise me you won't do this."
Oh, so, yeah. Because then she went back to check on him or,
But what is important is that she got to see a little squirrel fuck a big squirrel.
That was so good.
That was amazing. I snorted. I was like, this is me in nature. I'm like, ew, look.
Oh, shit.
That was hilarious.
What? A little squirrel fucking a big squirrel. We got to report that.
So good.
That's so good. I mean, that just adds a little cherry on top for the show.
Oh, it does. It's brilliant.
A healthy life starts with great sleep. Wake refreshed with Avocado's GOTS-certified organic green mattress, delivering breathable, back-loving support, natural materials from Avocado's own sustainable wool and latex farms, easy financing, a one-year sleep trial, and deep, restorative slumbers. Organic sleep awaits at avocadomattress.com.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively to Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.
All right. I think Eric?
Sure. Actually, mine's going to tie in very nicely with this. My main point is that this episode, I feel it did such a wonderful job of tying up so many loose ends. Like you were just saying, Jason, all these questions that we had at the beginning of the season, we have a lot of answers to now, as well as at least a few wonderful little callbacks that tie the room together, as it were. But you had the... what were you just saying about, you know, we find out more about Ellie and Kat, the beginning of their relationship, where the tattoo came from, where the burn came from, why Ellie was being such a petulant little pain in the rear.
Do you remember seeing her before, Lucy? Okay.
She was the one, she's the other one.
The other one. Exactly. Right. Yeah.
How could you forget the other one?
That actually made me laugh, because there were some people I know online who were like, wow, she seemed a little old for Ellie, saying there was only a 2-year time difference between that. So that's good as well. It just feels like we really kind of filled in a number of gaps that I felt so many people were asking about. And of course, did Ellie know? How does Ellie know? Did she wrap up things with George? You know, talk to Joel before he died. So we know now they didn't end in that angry confrontation. They ended on a positive note with Ellie being willing to forgive. And I think that's also a mirror to Gale with regards to Eugene and Joel, that she is now a year later, however long it's been, I don't think it had been a year, willing to forgive Joel. Right. Or at least working through it with enough weed and booze.
She's willing to be his counselor, so that's saying something.
Yeah. And the other thing that it caught my eye, that, you know, harkened back to episode 2, was bringing Eugene home. You know, dragging him in the snow and in the body bag behind the horses.
Where Joel will be in just, a few days, right?
Don't know. I'm not sure of the timeline on this. Like, how far off that happened to...
Oh, wait, that was 9 months later.
No, that was 9 months before.
Was that 9 months?
Everything. Okay.
But still, I'm sure it was intentional, meant to, you know, make us think about Joel.
Yeah.
It was 9 months before New Year's.
Yes.
New Year's was 9 months later.
What happened was like the day after.
The dance. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's right.
Yes, you are correct. So January. Oh, my God. That was January 1st. Fuck. Happy New Year, Joel. Oh, my God. It never really dawned on me.
That's okay. I'm sorry. This just popped into my mind, and that just makes a particular line from this episode so much harder.
Yep.
And it's when Tommy says, see you next year.
Oh.
And they never do.
it's so sad.
Yeah, Tommy, I guess, yeah, Joel went home. He didn't stick around and hang out for Tommy to come back and finish off their whiskey.
I will say, though, Joel had good closing scenes with everyone. Like that scene on the porch with Ellie ended with the promise of potential forgiveness. Maria made peace with him. Mm-hmm. See you next year. While something Tommy will probably hate himself for saying forever is actually not a bad way to. I was quite pleased that having seen how devastating and violent his death was, that the 12 hours leading up to it had those resolutions in them. I don't know. That felt healing to me to think about that.
I mean, I really do feel like I said, most of Joel and Ellie's relationship, they've had this block between them and they still had a great relationship, but it could have been a lot better if that had been removed. And then it finally was removed and then she lost him, you know, immediately after. That's what makes it even more sad.
Yeah. But I think I would rather have had that conversation
than not.
Yes, yeah, though the pain is worse, I think the pain of not having had it would be awful.
The pain of having stuff left unsaid beforehand is so much worse.
And I wonder if she would feel any differently about this whole vengeance thing with Abby if they hadn't had that conversation. Maybe not.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
So yeah, that's my point on this, though, is just it really felt that we tied up so many loose ends, so many questions that so many watchers and listeners have had over the last, 6 weeks, were kind of filled in. And even things like Seth's backstory. Okay. We know a little bit more about Seth. He was a former cop, but he's also a really good baker,
and a bad speller.
And I still don't know what they're using for flour, though.
And a fan of Legos.
Yeah.
We got somebody who called or did write in about the flour situation. And there's
I did hear
potato,
that. I
was starch, like, and there are other starches for sure. That
chickpea flour.
Yeah. I mean, hey, there's gluten-free cakes now, so
that's true.
There's clearly ways to do it.
Yeah.
And especially for people like Eli there, who's never actually lived in the previous world. They don't know the difference between a good cake and a bad cake. That thing tastes like shit, and they're just like, here. This is a cake. We like this. And they're like,
I think the most critical I felt about old Eli is when Joel turned around and she had her hand in that cake. I was like, what are you, an animal? Get out of it.
Oh, no. Team Eli, that cake looked delicious.
That was funny. And I had a similar thing. Like, what the?
I'd be so pissed.
Turned around for a second to get you a fork. You're in a kitchen. It's not like you're out in the wilderness, for Christ's sake.
Do you know, Peter said that exact thing to me this evening as I was eating my dinner. I'm like, come on.
I'm just eating. Get out of here.
Judgment, please.
Leave me alone. Do you need to go into the stream to wash off?
Why are you so like a raccoon? I'm like, no, I'm not. Like, I'm just hungry.
That's hilarious. Nico, I make him breakfast every morning, and whenever I make eggs, he just eats a whole egg in one shot. I'm like, cut it up.
Well, I mean, there's also the argument to be said, too, that, like, have they ever had a cake before? Do they know how to eat it?
Do I know how to eat food?
They made a point.
Desserts are different.
Season. That's true. Desserts are different, but they made a point in the first season that I almost said my kid's name. That's telling. That Ellie has absolutely no table manners whatsoever and does eat like a little rabbit animal. So,
so charming.
Oh, Eli.
That genuinely made me laugh seeing that cake.
Oh, it was so funny.
Lucy.
Oh, hi. I want to talk a little bit about the 17th birthday and the one where the tone shifts a little bit. She gets a chocolate cake that year, which means that Joel organized it in more time because chocolate cakes are more complicated. So
and
he's
made
getting
sure
haggis.
Tell Seth how to spell it right.
Eli no more. Eli no more. I got very upset about the tattoo because I was like, oh my god, she needs to not touch it and there needs to be so much aftercare, it's gonna get infected real bad. Like, it really stressed me out quite a lot, particularly when Joel was like touching it. I'm like, don't touch it, please, cover up, it needs to heal. Sidebar, I recently got my first tattoo, so it's been on my mind. It was Ellie's. So she's doing all the teenage shit at once, and I think what was hard to watch and I don't think Joel is a bad person before I say any of this. What's hard to watch was the little bit of kind of, if not homophobia, then homo nervousness that came into this scene where he was clearly taken aback that she was experimenting, which in itself was a bit problematic with other girls. And I think what really hurt her was when he said, we'll talk about this when you're yourself. And it's this idea of like the parent ideal of what the child is versus who the child is becoming and who they are. And they resolve it really nicely in later scenes where he talks about Dina and he's clearly on board with it. And in that moment, he's in shock. But the way that knee-jerk reaction of like talking about when you're yourself, which in part is about her being high and acting out, but in another part indicates that maybe he doesn't see who she really is in that moment.
I really like that because I found that to be one of the more realistic aspects of that, right? That is that is the way somebody like Joel, who never had to deal with that with his kid, who was a jock, who never got to that point in her life, you know, of course, 2003, all the thing we can go into. But yeah, this is like a construction worker in Texas, Austin, you know.
It makes sense.
Like, and
it's
real.
I gotta say, it's a daily habit for me around here to fly off the handle and then a half an hour later come back. Okay, I'm sorry. I thought about it and I was wrong. And he did it pretty quickly to his credit, you know. But I think it's great that the show shows real people. Like, yeah, this is, that did feel very real. It's not commendable, but it's very real. And I was proud of him when he came back and he's like, okay, maybe you do need your own space. Let me help you fix it up. You know?
Well, and what was funny also is that, you know, you hear the giggling and the TTT going on inside and you know, he's opening the door thinking it's her with like Jesse or a boy.
Yeah.
You know, and I think he was that, I think that was part of the shock. And then of course he's smelling the weed, sees the tattoo. It really was just like this,
everything.
It's a full whammy.
Yeah. This absolute avalanche of, oh my God, I'm getting every teen thing.
He got the full, he got the full teen angst experience like in one full moment.
And the way you phrase that, Lucy, was so right on. I think where it's just, parents, like, I used to be so mad at my grandmother. I lived with my grandma for a while there, and man, I'm as far apart in age with her as I am with my own kids. So she had kids young, and her, so it was almost like she was my mom. But anyway, she would never, like, she always saw me a certain way as her little boy, and never wanted to acknowledge some of the things that I was becoming that she didn't like, and that bothered me. I'm like, you're not seeing me as a person here, you know? I don't feel like I can connect with you if we can never have a conversation from who we really are. And it's hard, I guess it's hard for a parent, but because of that experience, I tell myself all the time, try not to do that to your own kids, you know?
Yeah. Oh, but my, it's mom, hard because, you know, you see them that way.
Yeah. Oh,
my mom always made it clear she you know, she was okay with my tattoos, but she doesn't like tattoos. She always made that clear. Yeah, that's okay. I must have
just gotten really lucky because like my mom always let me be who I wanted to be, because I think my own mother knew she also tried different things when she was growing up and it made her who she was. So she kind of allowed me to make the same decisions. Like, you know, I was allowed to make my own mistakes. She'd be there to help me through them. But I had to make them first.
Oh, dude, my parents, they were always, they allowed me also. I'm Gen X for crying out loud. We were the feral generation. We were just let out, you know. So, yeah, I'm fine with my mom, who, the rest in peace, who did not like my tattoos. She also didn't say, like, you can't have tattoos. I'm like, I'm a grown-ass man. I can do whatever I want.
Right.
She always respected that.
And it's, I think watching Ellie push back about, like, Joel not owning the house was quite funny. Because I was like, are we going to have another oh my God, I'm a communist moment. Like,
that's what it reminded me of. It was funny, but the point of what her saying that is like, you don't own me either.
Yeah.
That's what I got.
You don't own anything, including me.
I was going to say that comes up a little later too, when they're out and she's like, I'm not your daughter, I'm your partner.
Yeah.
Like, she sees their relationship a lot differently at that point.
Right. And I don't think, I'm not fully like, yeah, you go, Ellie. I'm like, okay, there's this awkward transition period, but he is your father, basically, and he is there to protect you and teach you how to be okay on your own. And we know from how she was on her own, she's been bitten like 5 fucking times since she's been out. And if she wasn't immune, she'd be dead.
This week. Yeah.
Look, say what you like about Eli. Like, she knows some stuff and doesn't know some other stuff. Like, a lot of kittens and...
Oh, that was cute.
A lot of kittens. A lot. It's so cute.
And this goes back to what you're saying about two things being true at the same time.
Yeah.
Yes, he is not her father. Yes, he is her father.
He is her father.
She is not her daughter. You know, she is not his daughter, but she is his daughter. So it's really interesting.
I think.
I mean, he in essence is the closest thing to a father she's ever had.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't know anything about it, at least real.
Yeah, I think she grew up in Fedra school. Well, no, not her father. Yeah. And we don't know any about why Joel is a single dad either. And his father seemed like he was a single dad. So I wonder if we're looking at some patterns here. But then we see
a curse.
A curse.
The curse of the Millers. The only explanation.
I enjoyed that Ellie has a very iconic Kurt Cobain poster on her door. I thought that was great.
Their Nirvana references this season have been
so good.
There's been a bunch.
Yeah. So good. I liked that Joel redeemed himself by like asking about the tattoo, although he did touch it again. Disgusting. And I like he's doing this thing where he's sort of overcompensating, and the way he delivered the line, moth, symbolic of change and growing and such. I was like, oh mate, no, stop, quit while you're ahead, please. Which led on to, I think, what was one of my favorite scenes in the episode, which was the scene with Gail in the diner, which was very brief, but just a fascinating scene. And I would love to see a spin-off of what Gail's life is like, but she must regret the day she told someone she was a therapist in that because good lord, the stuff she must have to kind of process.
I know it's paraphrasing, but the line, like, do I look like I have a sign on that says, like, the doctor is in, like, a fucking Peanuts character?
Love
yeah,
that.
Like, Lucy from Peanuts, my icon, Lucy Van Pelt. Yeah, the doctor is in. When I passed my PhD, I put that poster up on social media of Lucy with the doctor is in on it, and I was like, this is me. Gail is reading a book called Earth Abides, and I looked it up. I never read it or heard of it, but they have recently made a TV show of it. But it is a post-apocalyptic novel from the 1940s. I just thought that was quite interesting. There's not much in it aside from the fact that it's post-apocalyptic that relates to The Last of Us. The novel tells a story of the fall of civilization from deadly disease.
No. There is a connection.
Tell me.
And it's the showrunners talked about it on the official podcast. I actually listened to it this time.
Tell me.
Something that slightly appears in season one in Pittsburgh.
Okay.
When Ellie and Sam are playing soccer in that game, and there's like kids drawings up on the wall, and there's one of them says, "My savior, Ish." Now, Ish is a character that actually kind of, you see drawings of him throughout the game as you're playing, so you kind of follow this story as a secondary thing in the game.
God.
Ish is a character in The Quiet Earth, or whatever it's called, Earth Quiet, whatever that book is that she's reading. Ish is a character, which is where Neil Druckmann got the character of Ish from that book, which he then had Gail reading. So, yes, there's
Isherwood
a connection.
Isherwood Williams. Yeah. That's amazing. I love that.
That book, when I was in junior college, I was in a writing class and the teacher recommended that book. And that was, I think, the first time I ever heard of anything post-apocalyptic. And the idea of it just horrified me. The idea of all of society having crumbled. I was like, that is too bleak. And now look what I'm doing. That's all I ever talk about.
So
I never read it, but I read a little bit about it. And, because I was thinking, isn't it kind of morbid for her to read a book about that, given her situation? Mm-hmm. But it's called Earth Abides, and it's about the resilience of life and the idea that the earth will continue, even if civilization as we know it doesn't. So like endurance over tragedy, and the message is kind of like, yes, things fall apart, but life goes on in some form, and maybe that's enough. So I think it's almost like inspiration for her to read it.
I loved it. And I loved that when Joel asks about the moths and she like gives it a beat and she's like, why? She's like, I really don't want to be involved in this conversation, but I'm gonna anyway. And the last thing about that kind of era that we saw, the 17th birthday, 17th. was Ellie packing up her records, and the drawing she did that says "You have a greater purpose," and it interested me to really sit with that thought about the idea of Joel taking her purpose away, and that being a motivating factor in her anger and her frustration with it. Because if you knew you had the power to cure all of that suffering, I guess you would. You would want to, well, you'd hope you would want to do it. I don't know. Maybe I wouldn't, but
she does. Yeah.
That plays into her sense of identity as well. I thought that was a nice reminder of that. So yeah, 17 was my point.
Having all these birthdays, as you mentioned at the top, Eric, to delineate the time periods is really good because it shows special occasions where we can see Joel being especially caring with her and thoughtful, and B, it's just this really crucial period in her life and in anyone's life where we're going from being a child to an adult. Really, you're finding yourself, you're finding your identity and your purpose. And with her, that's especially intense because her purpose could have been to save the world and he took that away.
Yeah.
And then the thing with moths, when Joel is asking her about moths and he said they're about change and growing and such, I'm like, moths mean death. And then she Gail confirmed it, but I just think both of those are kind of fitting because she's growing up, she's changing, you know, but that's a little bit on the nose. But the death thing is she's preoccupied with the idea that Joel may have killed all these people to save her, and also that more people around the world are dying because of that. So I think maybe that's why she's preoccupied with death.
Now I honestly was not sure about what the moth symbolized, and for whatever reason, I never bothered to look. It's a symbol in the game as well, but I never really thought about it. So I did look it up after Gail said that. So, and it says moths are often seen as symbol of transformation, resilience, and guidance. They can also represent change, endings, and even death. And it goes on a few different things, but elaboration, transformation, change, resilience. Now, that one, moths are known for their ability to survive and adapt, making them a symbol of resilience. Endings and death, yes, of course. But also down here under some other ones, destruction and consumption, religious symbolism, other interpretations. Moths can also symbolize the pursuit of light, divinity, and universal secrets, depending on cultural beliefs. So
that's the Firefly connection.
Yeah. And it was just so interesting to me that there are these multiple different understandings of what the moth may represent. And I imagine the moth may end up representing various things to Ellie at different times in this journey that she's on. You know, I mean, resilience is a strong one that definitely would match.
Another example is to two things at once.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Or a few here. And I mean, in the game, the loading screen shows a bunch of moths fluttering around the light, and the tagline for the Fireflies is "Look for the light." So there's.
And what does she say? Like her favorite comic book character, she and Sam would always say, you know, endure and survive.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. Endure and survive. So even that kind of carries that same sort of message with that as well. And it was something that I honestly just, you're right, Jay. I mean, it'd be in the loading screen. We're sitting there watching moths fluttering around. It's on her guitar. It's her tattoo. And I'm like, that's pretty. Never once thinking about, okay, what is the symbolism behind
why?
That,
yeah. You know?
And death in and of itself, like in the tarot, death is sometimes a beginning. Like death is like not so much death of the body, but like death of an idea or death of a point in your life or death of childhood, or there's lots of different ways of kind of opening that up as well. And yeah, I love
here
that.
Here we go. Yeah. Endings and death. One of the other things here, looking in the symbolism, moths are nocturnal creatures and their presence can be associated with the end of one cycle and the beginning of another, including death. So
vengeance cycle.
Exactly.
Cycle of violence.
Ooh, yeah.
So there's a lot to unpack with that, I guess. That.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right. Moth unpacked.
Moth unpacked. Next.
I want to, there was something else real quick since we were on the scene of that birthday. I wanted to bring up, there's a particular album that you see in that scene too. The Zamfir album.
Yeah.
Pan Flute.
It's The Lonely Shepherd, though, is the name of the album.
Okay.
So I wonder if there's any deeper meaning to that, too, or if there's just, that's just an album that happened to be in that scene.
I assumed it was a game thing, so I'm interested to hear you guys talk about it. But
I don't think so, no.
Maybe it's related to Jack Shepherd.
Is there a lost crossover coming in the finale?
We have to go back.
No, we're not going back.
They're all in purgatory.
All right, let me do Ellie's 15th birthday. I won't take the astronaut one. I'll leave that for someone. But the 15th is where Seth is first making the cake. And I think having a birthday is also like an echo of when we first met Joel and it was his daughter Sarah's birthday. And didn't he forget the cake and he forgot the pancake stuff or something?
Forgot.
Yeah,
yes,
that's how they weren't infected.
Yeah. And now he's like making up for a lot. He's making up for not. I mean, he was a good father to her, you could tell, but he was a busy single dad. And now he's just so fucking thoughtful. And when Seth says he used to be a cop, Joel kind of gave him a look. I think that's because it reminded him of his father, maybe. Mm-hmm. Then just to see him fixing that guitar for her was so cool, the way it was filmed, just the love and care and craftsmanship.
A beautiful sequence. It was like ASMR or something. I was like, it I could watch YouTube of this all day.
And the way it was like, kind of saturated in color and put even the bone in there, which is a little morbid, was super cool.
Oh, it's great.
So
really
beautiful.
Cool.
Etching that moth in there. We should talk about what we think that meant. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm never bringing up anything again.
No, I'm just kidding. It was great.
Dude, I literally looked it up last night and I went into the similar way.
I love it.
We all looked at that. We're podcasters.
I know.
So then
we Ellie all look for that deeper meaning.
Comes in having burnt her arm, and I was glad that she confessed. She didn't try to hide it, because that just would have been the cliche thing to do. And we've
they
already
had her high as a
people
kite,
hiding stuff.
Hilarious. Yeah, it's like those videos of people coming back from the dentist.
And she's like, I just really wanted to wear short sleeves again. then he presents the happy birthday Eli cake, and she rips through it like an animal. And then, man, singing Pearl Jam's Future Days finally. So well done. God damn it. It was so good. It's one of my favorite parts of the game. The first episode of this season was called Future Days, and then that scene wasn't in there, and I felt ripped off. I was like, what? They're not going to have it? Oh, come on. So I'm so glad they had it. One thing I've seen online, some people are like, what is this, a musical? Like when Ellie picked up the guitar theater, they're like, oh, here we go again. And I think in part it works in the game maybe differently, is because those scenes are so spaced out, because you're playing that game for 30 hours literally. But I love it, and the lyrics of that song, if I ever were to lose you, I'd surely lose myself. Everything I've found dear, I've not found by myself. Try and sometimes you'll succeed to make this man of me. All my stolen missing parts I've no need for anymore. I believe, and I believe because I can see our future days, days of you and me. I mean, it's a little corny, but I think it's beautiful.
Well, didn't Ellie also play a little bit of it last episode too, didn't she?
Just the first line.
She started to, and then she couldn't bring herself to continue, and you could tell that it's because of this moment. You know?
Exactly,
just
made
me think of Joel, and she was back on track with the whole vengeance thing.
I sing this to my dog while my kids are sitting next to me.
And you're like, quiet down, kids, I'm having a moment here.
Love that dog.
God damn it, I love it.
That's so sweet, Eric. All right, Ben, what do you got?
Well, since you didn't take it, I'm gonna take it, and let's talk about, I mean, come on, it's the main reason
dinosaur.
Why it's the main reason I was really looking forward to this episode, was because we see the space capsule in the trailers for the season. So we know this moment is coming.
Mm-hmm.
And it is such a great piece of levity and lightheartedness that we needed, because this season has been so heavy.
Oof,
from
yeah.
episode 2 on. Dark. It has been incredibly heavy. And I feel like this was something that they gave us, because the finale is not going to be any different. The finale is going to be just as heavy, if not worse.
What? It's not going to be happy?
No.
Fuck.
We were almost done.
I thought we were really on the up, guys.
They found a way to bring Joel back.
New show. We're not the last of us.
We're the first of us.
Yeah,
I've just walked off. I've just put my microphone off and walked out the room.
The moth of us.
Next episode, everyone is cured. There was so much levity. The whole museum scene was so much fun. And you could tell by watching the two of them how much fun they were having filming all of this as well. Because there was so much humor. It was, again, it was the one scene I was looking forward to more than anything else this season, and it lived up to every expectation.
Be glad.
Yeah, in the back matter, Neil Druckmann said when they were filming or making the first season of the show over at Naughty Dog, they were creating the second game, and Craig Mazin was over there, and he goes, "You want to see some of the game?" Sure. And so Neil showed Craig this scene with the space capsule, and Craig Mazin said, "We're going to put that in the show exactly like that." And they totally did. It played out. I mean, the way she kind of imagines herself in space and it starts shaking and everything, it's exactly the same.
It's so well done. And I mean, and if nothing else, you learn Joel's love language is gift giving.
Yeah.
Because that's one hell of a gift to give anyone. It, like, there's so much said in just what he gives her without saying what he says. Like, yes, we get the whole "I love you" towards the end of the episode in that scene, but like, this screams it to her.
And it's doing things with his hands. Like, he oiled that orrery, which is a new word I learned that means a mechanical solar system. And he fixed up her guitar and just, you know, he's good at his hands.
But this, besides the hands though, this gift in particular, taking her here, the tape, this is a gift about everything about her. Has nothing to do with him. The guitar has to do with him. These guys, right? This is 100%. These are the things you like. I don't give a shit about them. You like it. You like dinosaurs. Dinosaur. You like space. You like the Apollo mission, you know, putting on that helmet. What does it smell like? Space and dust. I loved it. It was so, such a beautiful moment and such a considerate gift to give anybody.
And the fact that he's been sitting on this for a while too, like, he's known this place has existed, because it's that whole line like, "Oh yeah, like I told you, it's about patience." And she's like, "Oh yeah, I've heard of that." It's, you know, like, he's had this in the works for a while.
Yeah.
And when it finally just plays out, it is such a beautiful, to steal a line from Jason, wonderful just scene that I loved so much.
Yeah. And it's so much fun to do something like this for a kid, you know, just show them something that they've never seen and they'll be delighted by, or give them something. And it's selfish partly because it makes you feel young again or good, or see the world with those eyes of wonder and everything. And it almost hurts to see this scene because I'm like, I'm going to miss this, you know. Bodhi's 8 right now, so it's really easy to make his eyes just light up. But I feel so moved by this scene in the game and in the show. It's one of my favorite moments of the game too, if not my very favorite. I mean, that's what the game does so well. These scenes, like with the giraffes or this one or the guitar, it really gets you.
And this is I'd say the giraffe analog. You know, The Last of Us 2's analog to the giraffes is this scene, the motherfucking dinosaur and and the space capsule.
The moment the scene starts with her skipping rocks and she's just like, "Is it?" And she's questioning, I'm like, "Oh, I know what's coming." And there's a huge smile on my face already just from the moment that scene starts.
Lucy hated it though, right?
No, I loved it. I thought it was really nice. I thought the fact that they both shed a little tear was just really cute.
I know.
I like that, yeah.
I just, I got sad because I thought about all the things that kids like Eli are missing out on. Like, that made me sad. Like, the idea that, like, how unattainable so much stuff that we take for granted is. I think in a lot of apocalypse things, everyone there misses the same stuff, and the timelines that we follow are generally about people who feel that loss. Like, you get that a bit with, like, I guess the closest analog is Carl in The Walking Dead. Like, he can remember things that he doesn't have anymore. Like, he says to Michonne at one point, like, birthdays and stuff like that. Like, to him, having a birthday is a sign of, like, civilization coming back. But for kids like Ellie and Dina, it's a completely different world. Like, the astonishment of space and all that entails is so unbelievable to them, because they just have never lived in a world where it was ever a realistic possibility. And it just thought it was really beautiful. It was just very, very enjoyable, and I thought Bella Ramsey gave a great performance in particular, of just that wonder of the whole thing. And I loved the line, "What the hell are you going to do with a convertible?" I thought that was very on point.
Drive it.
Well, doesn't the wonder even continue? And I mean, it shows the build in Ellie's wonder too, because I think her love from space, doesn't it stem from a moment in the first game in season one of the show when she sees the plane and she's like, "Oh, do you mean those things used to fly?" And then now she's interested in even going further above that.
Yeah, I feel like it was
she's into the Savage Starlight comics, so I think
more to it than that. Yeah,
but in one of the recent podcasts, you made me think of something, Lucy, where I was trying to think, what would it be like to be a kid growing up post-apocalyptic and see all these remnants of this former world that you had no memory of? And I mean, the closest thing I can think of for us, even though it's not quite the same, is just being really into like classical music, or, you know, like you studying all this literature from people who have long since died, and the history of it all and everything. It's a little bit the same because it's a whole world that we'll never know. We can only read about, you know?
Yeah. And the idea of kind of immersing yourself in that, like, that's what I always find the most interesting about history, is like the people that lived in it. I'm less interested in, like, I've got a lot of friends who are like, I don't know, archaeologists and stuff, and they can tell you everything about how castles were built, and they're such cool, interesting people. But I'm always just like, but how did it feel? How did people live? What was that like? And just to have, I was listening to last week's pod, and what you said about the aesthetic saturation of the world in this show is so good, and that idea of just this lived archaeology of what the world was like not so very long ago, with the happy, proud people, and you know, people that could go to space, it just boggles the mind. I do often think about, like, in say like 100-150 years, when they're doing archaeology on this era, it's just going to be like a layer of like COVID masks and COVID tests that won't have disintegrated at all, because we had to use plastic.
It'll just be melted plastic. It'll be a many foot layer of plastic.
It'll be wild. They'll be like, "Oh, it's 2020. Like, we're here. Like, I've just spent some PPD." Like, yeah.
By the way, my youngest just let me know that they're changing their major, I believe, to medieval studies. And I'm like, "Oh, there's somebody I know you should talk to."
Another one.
With a minor in theology.
Maybe 100 years from now, somebody will find this podcast. Hi, future people.
Hi, future people.
What's
hope you're
it
having
like?
Fun. Clearly, we're all still alive, so you can just ask us. But, you know, we hope you're listening anyway.
Okay, I think we're at Eric, right?
I was actually going to talk about the museum visit. So, I mean, we have visited that immensely. No, we already have, for the most part. I mean, the museum was fantastic. I loved it. I loved seeing the capsule, the whole design of it, the solar system, the fact that it worked. And he talks about, you know, like you were mentioning, Jason, you know, him doing something with his hands. He started going into the oiling. I did like it when Joel, going back to the talking about
guitar,
the inlay and the guitar, he starts going on about the Dremel. And I was like, oh, it's construction talk with Joel Miller again.
Right. You
know? Again.
That reminded me, because he realized, she doesn't care about this. Yeah. Yeah. But it reminds me, when I first started podcasting, like, I don't know, a couple of years in, I was like, I should tell everybody about, like, the microphone and the editing and all that. And I'm like, no, they don't give a shit.
No. Anything that any individual you get into, whether it's medieval studies or construction or Lego or whatever it is, you start going on and trying to tell somebody who does not care about that. You're all excited. This is universal, right, for everybody. And you see that glazed look on their face of, I don't care. You know,
I'm smile like, I'm pretending
to care.
Yeah,
all right.
Wow, that's so cool that you like that.
I'm just wondering why somebody who was in the construction business gave up Legos.
I know. Because
I would keep them and build with them.
Oh, like, yeah. Well, he has full size stuff now.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm like Ben. I would hoard. I'd be like, no.
Yeah, let me keep that.
I am literally in my little office here. I'm surrounded by a bunch of Lego sets that I've done over the last few years, because I do big X wing
so
over here.
Satisfying.
I've got the
so
Trevi fountain over here to my right, and the Jaws set.
I not to get off topic, but I just bought another set and I'm waiting for it to come in.
Ooh, which one?
Ooh, what did you get?
It's not a Lego set. It's an MOC set, but it is of the The clock tower from Back to the Future.
Nice.
Yeah, of course.
The Lego of us.
Yes.
Well, I hope you reenact this scene, get some lightning going and
88 miles an hour. What, 3.2 gigawatts?
I'm just gonna run a little wire from the clock and put a little Doc Brown Lego figure on it so it's sliding down.
Amazing.
All right, Eric, what else?
No, that's all. I'm good with that. I like I said, I wanted to talk about the museum. It was fantastic. We did. I mean, there are just so many little moments throughout the whole thing. Like, I keep talking about these little things that tied everything together. Hell, even one of you guys mentioned, like, oh, yeah, Seth, maybe he's a cop, so maybe it reminds Joel that his dad was a cop. Just a personal note on that. During that first scene when Joel's talking, my dad was a cop, so my kid turns to me and is like, does this give you memories, Dad? Is this what it was like? I'm like, oh, yeah, kind of.
My father is also a retired police officer. Okay, so.
Yeah. No way.
Yep.
Oh, my God. That's nuts.
The cops of us.
The cops of us.
All right. Lucy, got any more?
Well, I actually had a point about the cold open. It was just to say that I thought the actor who played Kid Joel was really good. I think he was doing quite a good young Pedro. I could believe that this guy grew up to be the Joel that we know and love. And I could also believe that was Joel's dad. Like, it felt very... I don't know, it's like they distilled the essence of the Millers into that scene, and I think it worked really well. It was tough to hear that story about the candy bar and the broken jaw, and even tougher to hear a kid say, if you know it feels like that, then why? I thought it was interesting that his dad says, you know, I do this, but never like that. And this idea that we never want to believe the worst of ourselves, or that we are like the people that have come before us.
And even if he's telling the truth, it's still not good. You know.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, well, don't hit
I never broke
all,
my
then.
Kid's jaw, so yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I never did this, so I can't be as bad as that. Is kind of a way that we all use to justify things that we do that are not amazing. But I love this idea of sort of iterative intergenerational trauma of trying to do a little better every time. Yeah. And
it sort of fits the theme of the show about cycles.
Yeah.
Like cycles of violence, but now it's cycles of parenting and trying. You find yourself doing and saying things that your parents did. I think we all have that experience. Like, oh my God, I'm my mother right now. But you try to do a little better. And then, so his father's telling him to do a little better. And then at the end, he's telling Ellie, I hope you can do a little better than me. And that sort of echoes with her saying, I'm going to be a dad. And you think, oh, if she does get a chance to help raise that kid, will she do better than Joel or not?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it was a very nice bookend to this episode, right?
I was just going to say the same thing. Yeah. Yep.
I've always been, I'm always fascinated by the fact that Ellie is so, in the last two episodes ago, when Dina's like, I'm pregnant, and Ellie just with no hesitation is like, I'm going to parent this child. I'm always like, for such a young person, that is very admirable, particularly given that you've had mixed experiences with a complete absence of parenting in your formative years, and then this quite a very strong example from Joel, but one that wasn't without complications. And yeah, I kind of want Ellie and Dina to have the chance to keep doing better. And
I think
it works out.
I think that moment with Joel and Ellie at the end kind of plays into that now, because I think with that conversation that they had, and Joel telling her, I hope that one day when you have one of your own, you do better.
Yeah.
She sees that now. Like, I think that moment, which literally was maybe a day or two ago in the timeline, is still fresh in her mind. So she sees that as an opportunity that, okay, maybe I can do better. Like, this is my chance to do that.
Well, it's a 3-month difference at that point.
Oh, that's right. I forgot, because she spent some time in the infirmary. You're right.
Yep.
Even then, it's recent.
But she was out of it most of the time. There you go. So 3 months probably felt like a week.
There you go.
That guy is played by Tony Dalton.
The Joel's swordsman.
Dad. He was so good as Lalo in Better Call Saul. And I think that might be one reason why the scene where he's talking about, I mean, the moment where he's talking about his dad breaking his jaw creeped me out. Because if Lalo ever said that, then someone was about to get hurt or killed. So that kind of colored my experience.
I did think he was going to punch Joel. I straight
I feel like I can tell none of you have seen Better Call Saul, because it's
this is one of the best TV characters in recent years. So he's so good in it.
I know him more recently as he's the swordsman in Hawkeye and Daredevil, the new Daredevil.
Oh yeah, I remember him showing up in that. Yeah.
I also hadn't realized that young Mazzino was in Beef.
Oh, he's so great in Beef. Yeah. Yeah.
He's Steven Yeun's little brother.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I was like, oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. He's brilliant. He's so good.
Another thing about this intro is Craig Mazin said, you know, it was kind of to show that even as a kid, Joel was behaving as a protector to the weak. So that's why they had his father being abusive. And maybe he has a little bit of a savior complex even since he was a kid, so to kind of show that through line and, you know, also just introducing that concept of wanting to be better than your parents. I thought it was funny that he tells his dad, you're not going to hurt him, and then his dad gives him a beer. I'm like, I think he's 15 or 16, but...
Texas.
Was there ever anything about Ellie wanting a drink and Joel saying no? I can't remember. I might just be making that up in my head. I guess that's all.
I don't recall.
Sorry.
And now I want a beer.
Okay. I had a point about funny things because I thought it was so funny. And amazing. I do think that's because of Holly Gross being in there, co-writing. Like when Ellie comes in having burnt her arm and she goes, you know what it smells like? Pork.
Oh, God, I love that.
I was also a fan of him. I was like, here we go. And then we went. I was like, yep, yep. When she was talking about how she burned it, she's like, well, yeah, here we go. There we went. Yeah. Yep.
Explaining how you restored the guitar and she doesn't care. Joel coming in is, or no, that when they're out on patrol together and she says, no, it wasn't when they were on patrol. What was it? I think it was when they were out going to the museum and he goes, is there something going on between you and Jesse? I've seen the way you look at him. I've got a keen eye for these kinds of things. I don't think you do.
Nah.
That was great. That was very funny.
Or the whole, you know, you may not look like the rules, but this is my house. No, it isn't. You don't own it. They gave it to you. The whole, you guys study dreams and stuff to Gale and... Is there a doctor's insight on me like Lucy from fucking Peanuts? Yes, some doctors studied dreams, the dumb ones mostly.
People really don't like dream psychology. I think it's very debunked.
But, very Carl Jung. Yeah, I think that's gone the way of Freud. It's
Yeah.
To me, it's like tarot or psychic readings. It's kind of fun, but I don't put too much stock in any of it. Out on patrol, Ellie looking through binoculars. Oh, shit. What? There's a little squirrel fucking a big squirrel. And then the pun that I was sad that was missing from the part where Joel plays guitar for Ellie that is in the game. What's the downside of eating a clock?
Oh, God.
It's time consuming.
There was also a funny Joel was talking to Ellie about the Jesse thing, and then he asks if, you know, she's had the talk about the birds and the bees. Do you mean dicks and vaginas? Right. And the look on his face just like, Jesus Christ, Ellie.
Dude, you are something else.
Damn, Eli. But
we didn't quite like straightforwardly mention it, but now it makes sense. Something I'd complained about where Ellie was so pissed off at Joel the night of the New Year's Eve thing. And then in the morning with Jesse, she's like, yeah, I'm going to go on patrol with Joel. Like, you know, we've had our problems, but it's always going to be me and him, or it's, you know, everything's fine or whatever. And I'm like, whoa, what happened there? But now we know what happened.
Yeah.
Okay. Notes, Ben?
The only final note I'll say is that final scene with Joel and Ellie. Yeah, I was left in tears. Like that was, I was in tears at the end of that.
Yeah, it was so good. And I think it's one of those things where when the actors know that they're not going to be doing scenes anymore, it's easy to conjure up that emotion because it's partly real maybe. And also, Neil Druckmann, he wasn't going to direct any of the episodes this season, but he really cares about the stuff in this episode, so he asked to do it. And he said that scene in particular, he was like really worried that it wasn't going to come off as well as in the game. But he said once it was over, he's like, yeah, we did it.
I love the fact too, in the making of the episode afterwards, that Neil actually climbed to the top and also yelled, I'm on a fucking dinosaur, just to experience something that he created. That was kind of cool to see.
Man, my fear of heights kicked in on that. I'm like,
I know.
Damn. Oh, I would have done it. I would have done it in a heartbeat.
I can't do it.
Well, he had a harness.
No,
he was like connected to a wire.
I thought the lighting in that scene of Ellie's face, it looked almost game-like. I don't know. There was something about it, like the way it was lit. It looked really like the aesthetic from parts of the game. I really enjoyed that. I just thought it was very beautiful.
There was one thing we did not mention. I just remembered the opening title sequence.
Yes,
had two figures again. So it no longer was just one Cordyceps figure. It was then two once again. So
yep,
that was nice. I was like, oh, Joel's back.
Yeah.
If next week there's like none, that'll be scary.
It's going to be three. We're going to be like, huh? What?
Wait.
Okay. It'll be one and a horse.
Right. And a robot. Okay. Anything else, Eric?
No, I'm good.
Lucy?
You covered most of mine with the funny lines, to be honest. Those were the ones I had listed down there. And yeah, nothing. Nothing. I just enjoyed it. I thought it was great. Oh, I guess we didn't really speak about that final image of Ellie in the rain in Seattle, just looking broken. Like, just broken. Post kind of Nora. Where she is now, knowing what she's just done to Nora. Yeah, just seeing her so young and innocent and kind of growing up through all of this. I don't know if Ellie was ever innocent per se, but she was definitely younger and lighter and now...
More innocent.
Just the ominous rain and crashes of thunder, just incredible.
What do you mean? Jason said Nora survives.
She's in next week's episode. Oh, okay. The musical finale.
Where they all make up and go,
yep.
Go to the museum. Okay, I just had a couple. The making of has Pedro Pascal saying goodbye to the cast and crew, probably his last day of filming.
I have a feeling this was a series wrap for him, yeah.
Yeah, he goes, you guys are the best that I've ever seen and been a part of. There's nobody like it, guys, and all these cheers, and it was just really nice.
Oh, you know, on the last episode, we were, you and I and Pialani, we were talking about what our favorite Pedro Pascal movie is outside of all of this. And I jokingly said Wonder Woman 1984, just because maybe. And then last night I was watching Kingsman, The Golden Circle, and he's in that one again. And I'm like, this isn't it either. But my favorite, in all seriousness, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent.
Massive Talent is such a great movie.
Wonderful movie. And
hey, I liked Kingsman.
I liked it too, but it's not a great movie and nobody's putting it on their top 10. That's all I'm saying. I like a lot of shit.
The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent is a phenomenal movie for anybody who has never seen it.
It's been bugging me all week since we talked about it.
Stayed at, there's some of the, because it's filmed mostly in Dubrovnik in Croatia, and we went there 4 years ago, and there's bits of it that were filmed in the hotel we stayed at. Nice. I was like, oh my god, holy shit, that's, and they must have been there just a couple months before we got there. But it's also doubly funny because the Dubrovnik's Game of Thrones country. Yep. So yeah, there's a big King's tie Landing. To Pedro Pascal already. Yeah, no, it's great. If anyone gets a chance to go and watch that film, it's so good.
I was there in 1990 when it was still Yugoslavia, before the war.
Oh my god!
Yeah, I have beautiful pictures of it. Yeah.
Oh,
I need
that's
more.
Amazing.
I need more Pedro and Nick Cage buddy movies. That's 100%. What I'll say from that.
100%.
I'm just so looking forward to Fantastic Four.
I
just have a really good feeling about it. Okay, one last thing. They built the motherfucking dinosaur, which is so cool. And they also said that in the museum, the stars weren't lighting up right. So they lined the walls with velvet and used rhinestones that they bought from a dollar store. They said they bedazzled the walls.
Nice. So didn't they also build all the other dinosaurs? I heard that they built
I think
more.
They built it all. Yeah,
they built the whole
and they
thing.
Built,
that's amazing.
They built the orrery, the thing showing plants revolving from scratch. I think they built the space capsule to specification. Yep.
I looked it up, what the Apollo 15 capsule looked like, and that was it. I'm like, oh my god, it's the
that
same
was
thing.
It.
Yeah, Druckmann says they built it to spec. Like, it's an exact replica.
Yeah, very cool.
Okay. All right, so that's it for the main segment. Lucy's, you're going to be saying goodbye so you don't get spoiled.
I am. All right. Bye, everyone.
Well, it was really fun to have you back.
Always fun,
and
Lucy.
We'll see you on for the finale, yeah. Right?
Oh, and good luck tomorrow, Eric.
Well, thank you. I guess, yeah, we can go ahead and talk about this now. I, in light of recent news, we'll say with our former president, Joe Biden, being saying that he has prostate cancer. Turns out I have prostate cancer as well. Everything is fine. I will be 100% good. Tomorrow, as Lucy was just referencing, I'm going to have surgery to have the cancer and my prostate removed, and all will be wonderful. But I want to take this moment to say, hey, a lot of your listeners, Jason, tend to be like us, a little middle-aged. You know, I'm 53. Guys, get things checked out. Go to your doctor. Get your annual checkups. It's important. You know, I found out this. I mean, this is intermediate for me. I'm in good shape, and I've caught it early enough, thanks to the blood test, checking for PSA, for the antigen for your prostate. So get that checked. And ladies, get those mammograms. It's important. You know, that's
absolutely.
So, yeah, thank you for asking, Lucy, and I will be fine. It's going to be A-okay. I'll still be podcasting afterwards. Yeah, it's been a very weird couple of months going through this. But
well, we'll be thinking of you tomorrow, and yeah, get everything checked, everyone.
Yeah.
Get everything checked, everyone, all the time. But yeah, good luck with it.
Thank you.
I look forward to seeing you all next week for the finale.
See you next time.
See you then.
See you then, guys. Bye, bye, bye.
Bye. All right, we are back sans Lucy for some game talk. There actually, I don't foresee any huge spoilers. We're just going to be talking about differences from the game as usual. But if we do have anything that we want to say about future events, we'll just save that to the end and warn you guys before we get to it. But these are just some of my favorite moments from the game. And I'm just so thrilled with how well they captured all of it. Right, guys?
And they added to it. That's what I liked. It's like they didn't really take much away. They simply gave us a little more.
Mm-hmm. I'll start with one thing. The guitar scene I thought was beautiful in the game. That's like one of the very first scenes. And I do feel like there was one little something lost by not having Joel do it after Ellie was already moved into the garage, because in that arrangement there was already a little distance between them. She'd already retreated into her own space, and then the guitar scene kind of warmed things up a little bit between them, which was really nice. In the show it was just more like everything's already really great, but look how great it is, which was also great. That was fine too, but it just wasn't quite the same as in the game in that way.
Okay, yeah, I could see that.
Yeah,
also you know, Joel's voice left a little bit to be desired in this versus the game version.
Oh, like, I know that's true.
Like, you know, after we heard Ellie singing Take On Me, I was like, oh my God, I want that recording. That is so beautiful. You know, and even Troy Baker doing Future Days, like, oh, that's great.
Yes.
This? Whew. Okay. Yeah. So we know Pedro Pascal cannot do.
There is something that Pedro cannot do.
Troy Baker do that part. Coming out of Pedro's mouth.
He can't play guitar either. He was not playing guitar.
I'll say it felt like a really good scene of the best. Of the best emotion you could have in a scene from a guy who can't actually sing. You know what I mean?
No, it was great. I mean, it really was great. And I thought it played really well, but I noticed that. I'm just going to say that.
I did too. I did too. Absolutely. And I think I couldn't remember, because in the game he had told Ellie that he thought maybe he'd want to be a singer.
Yes.
And I don't think they ever had that in the show, right?
No, not that I remember.
I hope not. Yeah, that was back. That was the University of Colorado. Back in the game, yeah.
When they're going to, when Joel's leading her to her present at the museum, and Ellie keeps throwing out guesses, and at one point in the game, she goes, "Is it a dinosaur?" And he goes, "Stop trying to guess. Yeah, I ain't telling you." But here, she says, "It's a dinosaur," and he goes, "You're not going to get it," which is another little lie, you know? It's like, it's fine. It's a birthday lie, but...
Yeah, and of course, the museum scene, I mean, they did lop off a lot. I mean, this is where in the game we discover that Ellie, he taught her how to swim, right? Yes. That was kind of a big deal.
It's a big part of it. And it's significant because in the first game, she couldn't swim. And so they end up in water a lot and he has to like push her around on pallets. And so I think at the beginning of this game or this sequence in the game, he pushes her in the water and it's a little bit of a, oh shit moment. But you learn she knows how to swim.
What were some, I mean, again, the things that they added, like the birthday with Kat, you know, getting her tattoo. So we get so many of these other things filled in that we did not get in the game, which I really thought was pleasant, and they were done well. I thought, you know, that it was a case where the changes I felt were like, okay, these really work. I have you know, zero notes in terms of that.
Yeah, I mean, even with the museum scene too, like they did, like you said, they did trim that back because that scene is a lot longer in the game.
And there's some infected in there. There's an encounter with infected.
Oh, yeah. But what they trimmed off, there was nothing lost with that scene. They trimmed off what was appropriate to trim off to still make that scene as impactful as it was in the show.
The main thing they did trim, though, is her seeing the Firefly symbol, right? And kind of asking, and it said liars on it, if I recall correctly.
In the game, yes.
So, yeah. In the game. Yeah. Now in this, and it took me the second watch through when Ellie and Joel are walking away from the museum, she pauses and looks over to some greenery. I had no clue what she was looking at.
The fireflies.
I rewound it and finally saw them. I'm Californian. We don't have fireflies here. So I didn't really see them. When I went to DC a couple of years ago, it was amazing. I love seeing fireflies. So cool.
I went to Iowa. Yeah, it's really cool. But that was just sort of to remind you that, hey, even though everything seems like it's all rosy, this is still on her mind.
Exactly. I thought it was very subtle.
Yeah. And that's probably why they didn't have the firefly symbol in the museum, because they already had that.
Yeah, and they don't need to beat you over the head. We're going to cover this in this episode as well. And of course, Ellie doesn't go to Salt Lake in the show.
Oh, yeah.
You know, she takes off, goes to Salt Lake. And it is always funny to me, this notion of like, oh, she just runs off and Joel's like right behind her. I'm like, dude, that's Wyoming to Utah. How is that like such as? So it makes sense that she did not just take off to go to another state.
I'll mention that the final scene of this episode, which is actually one of the final scenes of the game itself. And they gave it to us a lot earlier in the series. And that is Joel and Ellie on the porch talking about everything. And you want to talk about things that were added to this. There was so much added to, I don't want to say so much as it like a lot, but there is the fact that Joel says, "I love you" to Ellie is not in the game. That is new to this series. And that is the reason why I mentioned before we started going into game talk how this last scene made me, like, got me choked up and actually made me cry. I remember feeling the impact of this scene playing the game, but seeing it play out in addition to, you know, Joel saying, "I love you," to, because in the game, Joel is very stoic. Like, he's kind of just stern the whole time throughout this entire conversation.
Pedro Pascal is full of emotion, like he's about to break down crying compared to Joel. And it's hard not to feel something yourself when you're sitting there watching that.
Yeah. Pedro made this feel so much more emotional as Joel in this moment.
And it was a great scene, I think, in the game too, but
was. Yeah.
Just a couple other little things. When Ellie climbed up on the dinosaur, if I'm remembering right, this was more precarious in the show because in the game she was above water, right?
Yeah, and she jumps into the water.
So I remember last night watching this going, oh shit, she can't jump off. She's going to die. And then only other note I had is when they walk in and see the space capsule and they're walking right towards it. And I'm looking over at the sides where the space suits and the helmets are. And I'm like, oh, I always go grab a helmet. And then Joel tells her to go get the helmet. And I'm like, hey, okay.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And there's no hat here. There should have been the fedora, which is in her room, but they didn't show it. Yeah. So.
Yeah. She picked it up from this place. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Now we're going to feel free to talk about any of the events in the game, including stuff that happens in the future, which might spoil stuff in the show. So if you don't want to hear that, you should probably stop listening. And thank you guys for listening, as always.
The only thing I'll say is, and we kind of touched on this a little bit too, just with that final scene, the fact that that scene was in this episode, that's what gave me the impression before I saw the making of that this was going to be a series wrap for Joel, for Pedro. I was like, if they're giving us that scene now,
they're not leaving anything.
Yeah, then there's not really much for him to return to. Force Ghost Joel.
Yeah, it's sad because we always knew we had this to look forward to, and now we don't anymore. Yeah. But like I said, it's like wishing you had one more day with that person that you lost.
My only thing would be, like we were just talking about, the placement of that final scene. Mm-hmm. Now that it's not at the end, now that it's not going to be that trigger for Ellie to stop her cycle of vengeance, what will take its place? You know, and my thought,
In the game, it happened right before the scenes with Abby at the end, or
she's literally strangling Abby in the water, about to kill her, and then this scene plays out in her head, and so This is the first time in the entire game at the very, very end.
No, this scene plays out after Abby. This is when she's back to the house and the house is empty. And she picks up the guitar. Yeah.
Oh, is that what it is? Oh, yeah. Sorry, She just has a flash of Joel. You're right. Mm-hmm. Thank you. You just played. Right.
Joel's not flashing her, just to be clear. It's just she sees his face.
You're correct. Sorry. So, but she has the flash to that. What stops her. So my guess is going to be that's going to be a reflection on parenthood at that point, that she needs to do a little bit better. And at Ellie's point, in that moment, she's not doing any better for their little potato.
No.
Not at all.
So. Do you think this could potentially... Do you think that Mazin and Druckmann could change the ending so that the house is not empty when she gets back? And kind of give Ellie a little bit of a happy ending?
My hope still is that they do a third game and that it coincides so that they can do more seasons of the show. I'm less optimistic that's going to happen because Craig Mazin has said, you know, I've given up like 10 years of my life for this. And
I heard that they were talking about season four, that there is a talk of season four. So if that's the case, then that have to be a third game.
Well, they've always said that the second game could go through season three or four, but with the pacing they're at now, it seems like only one more season.
I don't know. Cause I think with the pacing that they've been going through, the fact that we just got through to the Nora part and we just wrapped up with that, I think there could be two more seasons.
I mean, I think, and Eric, I think thinks this too, that next episode by the end, it's going to be Abby and Ellie at the theater.
Yep. Ooh,
okay.
I think so. And then I think the next season is going to be Abby's 3 days. We're going to get probably an episode at the stadium. We'll get an episode at the Santa island Barbara. At the end. You know, we'll get Santa Barbara at the very end. And that right there is already 7 episodes or 6 episodes, you know, so I think they could very easily wrap it up.
I think they could. But anyway, if they do a third game and wrap up the story with that, then I would really want it to end just the way it did, on that sad note, you know, not end on a happy ending. And I hope that a third game, I don't hope, but I wonder if it would be Ellie finally getting to sacrifice herself for a cure. I could see it ending that way.
Well, that'd be nice.
But if they do have to end the series after this game, then at the end of this game, then I don't know, man. I still kind of
would like for it to end the way it did, just because there is a cost to what Ellie did.
The name of this episode, right? The price.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I've always been more like okay with endings that aren't totally happy.
I remember an old coworker. I had an old coworker. She was a former Soviet, grew up in Uzbekistan or maybe Turkmenistan, one of the stands. And she always told me, to Eric, there's always the difference between American movies and Russian movies. American movies are always a happy ending. Russian movies, everybody dies. You know? And it's pretty much like, yeah, The Last of Us is kind of like the Russian movie of video
more
games,
of a Russian,
you
know? Movie. Yeah.
It's like the Rogue One of video games. It's
I do like the fact that by the end of this episode we're seeing Ellie approaching the theater with the storm, because that storm plays a heavy part in the future forward. So
true. It has been very dry, hasn't it? Like the game, it's a lot wetter.
Yeah.
All right, that is our show, episode 646. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Next up, The Walking Dead, Dead City, Season 2, Episode 3. Why did the mainlanders cross the river to get to the other side?
That sounds like a Negan joke.
All right, if you want to write in or leave us a voice message about it, you can find all our contact information at podcastica.com.
And while you're there, please make sure to check out our other podcasts.
Yeah, if you're not watching Poker Face, I highly recommend giving that show a shot. It's really fun. It's a throwback to
Columbo. It looks fun.
If you like Columbo, I mean, but it's fresh with modern writing and funny as hell. It's awesome, man. I think you would love it, Eric. I really do.
By the way, Jason, I have started listening to the Andor podcast. And I'm thoroughly enjoying it. I'm almost done with the season one recap. Awesome. But yeah, I look forward to hearing the rest.
I still need to start that show.
Yeah, you said you were going to watch the whole thing and then watch Rogue One afterwards.
Well, yeah, I was waiting for season two to wrap, which is over. So now, probably within the next week or two, I'm going to start.
You were in for such a treat. We did at the end of the second season, we did restart Rogue One. And immediately after Rogue One, my wife says, put on A New Hope. So we watched A New Hope.
Yeah.
And now
it's like one long ass movie.
We have just restarted season one of Andor again, because now you go back and I'm picking up so many little details that I missed the first time through that I cannot say enough about this series. Holy moly.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to it.
Cool. I have more, that I want to say, but we're at the end, so we'll have to save it for another time. But let me just say, this episode is made possible by Patreon supporters like Madeline Joe, who've pledged their support at patreon.com/JasonCabassi. So thank you to Madeline, who just guested with us over on the Handmaid's Tale podcast, and she was great. That was cool. All right, that is our show.
Thanks for listening.
Don't get bit, Ricky White. Get that prostate checked. No,
I almost said I was going to say something like that.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting.
It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively to Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.